Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Times Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 112 event, which takes place in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. We broke down how we performed in our last event on the Bellator podcast, so make sure to check that one out. And just a disclaimer, guys, we recorded all 21 fights for Bellator and UFC in a row, the breakdowns, and when I went to go add them to the podcast, all of Nick's parts were completely silent, so we had to go re-record all of Nick's parts, so if he sounds a little rushed, it's because he's a trooper and he basically broke down 21 fights twice in a row. So back to the present. UFC Fight Night 112 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 2, and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a light heavyweight contest between Joshua Stansbury, who is 8-4, and Jeremy Kimball, who is 14-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Kimball minus 130, the comeback on Stansbury minus 110, and that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, so make sure you guys check those guys out. And right now over at Five Dimes, we currently have Stansbury at minus 185, the comeback on Kimball at plus 160. So a little bit more action, needless to say, coming in Stansbury way. A lot of people think that he's definitely the more dependable fighter of the two, especially with Kimball's UFC debut going the way it did. I mean, there was a little bit of buzz coming in with Kimball. Of course, he's been on some of the smaller organizations for a while. I mean, he's been a fighter that people have seen compete in the past, but the truth is he did make a little bit of progress. He's been training at MMA Lab and Crew over there, and it seemed to get him a little bit better and a little bit more respect and a little bit more hype behind him, because I mean, he's always had a little bit of potential, but they seem to bring the best out of fighters as well. Anytime you go to a really good training camp like MMA Lab or obviously American Top Team or Greg Jackson's camp, it's going to make you a better fighter. So there were higher expectations from Kimball coming into that fight, but of course, De Lima was able to finish him, and it wasn't a good look for Kimball at all. So the expectations just went totally out the window there. And I think people are fading him here against Stansbury as well, because at least Stansbury has been showing up. He's been putting on respectable performances overall. I don't think Stansbury is going to ever earn a UFC title shot, needless to say. I think, honestly, these two are probably barely in the UFC as far as roster slots go. I mean, the winner of this fight probably keeps his job. The loser probably gets cut, even if it's Stansbury and, you know, he hasn't been losing a ton or whatnot. I mean, he's been, I guess, competitive, but I think even with a couple losses, he's going to get cut as well. So loser leaves town type of matchup is very important for both fighters here. That being said, I mean, Stansbury, I've been kind of a fan of his for a while. He's an Ohio fighter. I've seen the development and the improvement of his game. He's definitely put in the work, and I respect that. I mean, he's become a solid fighter, and he deserved a shot on the Ultimate Fighter show, which he performed respectable, and then into the UFC as well. So it's all hard work that he's put in to get him to the spot, so I respect that. I just think that at times he's susceptible a little bit on the feet. Now, officially, he hasn't been knocked out, but as an amateur, he has been knocked out, and then obviously on the Ultimate Fighter show, he's been knocked out as well. So I think his strike defense at times lets him down. I think he tends to be a bit chinny at times as well. And if anything, Kimball can bring to the table here, it's his unorthodox striking ability and underrated power. I mean, the guy does have some knockout power. Even if he's going to be a little bit undersized here, I think he's going to have a little bit of a speed advantage. And I think he could land and catch Stansbury off guard a little bit here. And also, Kimball has been developing that takedown defense, and it's getting a little bit better. So his wrestling's improving. I think it's going to be a close competitive fight. Even if Kimball doesn't land that big bomb, I think it's still going to be a really close fight if he hits the scorecards as well. So I'm not as confident as everybody else in this fight. I could see Stansbury winning. I could see Kimball winning. That's why I kind of opened it towards a pick 'em type of fight. I'm going to lean the opposite way of everybody right now, and I'll go Kimball. I think that Kimball hangs on to his UFC roster spot here by maybe possibly even beating Stansbury, knocking him out on the feet, if not maybe edging out a close decision. So not a confident pick, but I lean Kimball in the first fight of the night.
the big difference in this fight, it's basically going to boil down to Stansbury's size and length against Kimball's power. Honestly, I think these guys are basically two of the worst fighters in the light heavyweight division right now. So this one could go either way. Neither guy I expect to stick around for a long time, much longer in the light heavyweight division. But overall, I think Stansbury's a little bit more well-rounded. I mean, he has an okay ground game. He's okay on the feet. He's pretty much just okay at everything. He can be outworked by active strikers, but Kimball's not really an active striker. He's kind of the home run hitter. He looks for the big shot. Kimball is not very quick. He's not in great shape. I mean, he's husky. He's a little bit more compact. I mean, he looked awful in his UFC debut against Lima and got smoked in that fight. And I mean, if he comes into much better shape this time around, there's a chance he could win. But I mean, if he comes in the same way, like I know the last time was short notice, so that could have had an effect. But if he comes in looking the exact same, I don't know how he could win. Josh Stansbury has an okay jab and he is able to use distance decently as long as his opponent isn't overly aggressive. And Kimball, with him looking for the one big shot, I think that could allow Stansbury to use that the jab, and then that can set up the straight right. So I'm kind of leaning Stansbury here. I'm not confident in either guy. I don't think either guy has a long career in the UFC, but I think Stansbury has a little bit more ability here. So I'm going to side with Josh Stansbury. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Tony Martin, who is 11-3, taking on Johnny Case, who is 22-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Now, this is a fight that I'm looking forward to as well. Martin versus Case. I opened Martin -130, the comeback on Case -110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Martin -140. The comeback on Case is at +120. So a little bit more action coming in Martin's way. In fact, it escalated a little bit higher than that. I mean, it was, I believe, 160, 170 at one point. So some action coming back in on Case. So there is two-way action on this fight. And I'm sure the sports books are going to continue to get drilled with two-way action on this fight. It's just a great fight. Both guys are going to get backed for a good reason. Both of these guys are talented. I think Case lost a little bit of stock recently because he did suffer a loss to Jake Matthews and he got finished in that fight. Matthews was able to turn it on late and end up getting the submission win over Case. And he's been out since that loss to Matthews. So he's had some time off. He was pulled out actually of his last fight with an injury. So there's some question marks surrounding Case, but at this point, he's coming back into a big fight here. And if he's healed up fully, obviously, and he's got some confidence behind him and has been able to put the work in to improve some of those areas that he lacked, conditioning might have been a factor in his last fight a little bit as well. I think obviously Matthews landed some decent punches along the way and made life a little bit tougher for Case. Martin in this fight is going to present a lot of problems because Martin does have a relentless style, especially in the grappling aspect. Martin brings it. His cardio seems to have been improved. I mean, that was one thing I worried about Martin from time to time, his fight IQ and his conditioning. Now, both have seemed to get a little bit better the last couple fights. And when he's on, Martin's a very tough out at lightweight. I mean, the guy just, again, relentless pace. He brings it. He's able to get the fight to the floor more times than not. And that used to be Case's kryptonite back in the day. Was definitely, before he made the UFC roster especially, Case getting put on his back and being able to control Case would get you the W. And now Case has improved that. I think his takedown defense has definitely gotten better. But that's still a little bit of hold in his game, you could say. And then Martin is going to be looking to exploit that for sure. On the feet, I give the edge to Case. I think he is by far the better striker overall. I think as far as chins go, it's close because Martin is a type of guy that does get wobbled on the feet, but his chin ends up holding up more times than not. So you got to respect that in him. He's able to recover fairly quickly and then go back to the grappling aspect of things usually for Martin. So this is going to be a tough fight for both guys. I think both of them are going to definitely feel it at the end of this one. Like, I mean, it's going to be a hard-fought battle. I think I'm leaning a little bit towards Martin because I think he can control and dictate the tempo of this fight. I think he can have success getting Case down from time to time. And if he does get him down, there's always that wild card. Martin has an underrated submission game as well. I mean, he does have some pretty slick subs offensively, and I wouldn't even be surprised if Martin's able to finish Case on the ground by sub if he gets the right position. So I have to lean a little bit more towards Martin. I think the line's about right. Slight favorite. So I'll go with him as the slight favorite as well.
Whether or not Johnny Case wins this fight, to me, boils down to how much he's improved since his last fight. It's been a while, but, I mean, he took on Jake Matthews, and in that fight, he had a bit of his hands full on the feet, although he was definitely doing pretty well there. And then Matthews got him to the ground and was able to submit him late. So if he has improved in that department, then he's got a decent chance of winning this fight. If he has not improved with his takedown defense, then I think Tony Martin is going to be a handful for him. I mean, Tony Martin is one of the bigger, stronger lightweights in the division. He's not an amazing wrestler, but he can just, once he gets his hands on you, he can just drag people to the ground, as you saw in the Alex White fight. Now, on the feet, Martin isn't exactly a world beater, but I mean, he will have a slight reach advantage, very slight, and Case should be the better striker, but Martin is a pretty strong striker early in his fights before he starts to fade down the stretch. Martin's conditioning could definitely be a factor here, because if he does not win the first round or the first two rounds, then Case can come on strong and either steal a decision by winning the last two rounds or maybe even finishing Martin. We have seen Martin slow down enough to the point where guys like Beneil Dariush were able to, you know, wrap him up in a submission and tap him out. So this is a tough fight for Martin. I think Martin looked really good in his last fight. He was able to keep constant pressure, and he was able to get the takedowns for all three rounds against White. But I think Johnny Case is a bit of a tougher test here, so it'll be very interesting to see how Martin performs. That being said, I like Martin. I think that he started to really turn the corner after a tough stretch to begin his UFC career against some really good opponents. And I think the winner of this fight is going to be knocking on the door in the top 15 of the lightweight division. And I think Tony Martin, with his well-roundedness, and especially if he can get the takedowns and keep Case down, I think there's a very good chance that he wins a decision here. So my pick is going to be Tony Martin. Now, moving down to the featherweight division for the Fight Pass headlining bout, we have a contest between Jared Gordon, who is 12-1, and Michelle Quinones, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Gordon minus 140, the comeback on Quinones at even money. Right now, looking over five dimes, Gordon minus 140, the comeback on Quinones is at plus 120. So two-way action coming in this fight. The line did drop, and now we're seeing some action back on Gordon as well. So the sportsbooks will continue to get two-way action on this fight. Pretty impressive considering both guys are making their UFC debuts officially. Now, of course, this fight was supposed to take place back at UFC 211. Gordon was forced to pull out last minute due to an illness, I think food poisoning or something towards that nature. So we didn't get to see this fight take place. This is a fight that I'm looking forward to as well. Gordon was discovered on Looking for a Fight, Dana White's show there, after he won the CFFC title. So that was impressive. He's a champion on a smaller organization, but he's fought respectable opponents in that league as well. So a good resume for Gordon entering the UFC. Solid boxing is his background. He's got a complete overall game, I should say, with solid boxing and then solid takedowns and ground and pound as well. So this guy can do it all, really. I mean, he could beat you on the feet. He's got knockout power to go along with it. He could take you down. He could control you, and he could finish you on the ground as well. He can grind you out on the scorecard. So it's a very tough out for Quinones, but I think Quinones is going to be up for it. I mean, he's a very talented fighter in his own right. He's more of a striking based fighter. He does show a lot of good footwork and head movement, excellent kickboxing, nasty knockout power in his own right. I mean, that's really how he gets things done. If he's able to sprawl brawl and pick his opponents apart and then deliver that knockout punch on the feet, or kick, I should say, he can do so. Now, he definitely needs to improve his takedown defense and ground game a little bit more overall. And he's going to be tested here against Gordon. So that's what he needs to definitely focus in on. If he could keep this fight upright, I do give him the advantage. Even though Gordon has some solid boxing, I think Quinones can outstrike Gordon on the feet a little bit. And Quinones does have some experience in his own right before the UFC. I mean, he's fought in Bellator. He's fought in Titan as well. So he's fought in solid organizations. And I think from what I'm hearing and seeing out of both fighters, I think they are improving fight by fight. And I think that they're going to be ready for this UFC debut. I'm going to side with Quinones a little bit more here. I think that he can stuff some of the takedown attempts from Gordon. And I think he's the more versatile striker. And I think he probably gets the job done. My slight lean will be towards Quinones to get the W here.
Well, I've already broken down this fight before. I mean, Quinones is a big time threat on the feet, a lot of knockout power, but I think Jared Gordon is just a little bit more well-rounded. I mean, I talked before about Gordon overcoming a lot of drug issues and everything. And he definitely has a very sympathetic story if you haven't checked it out already, but, he had his issues the last time these guys were matched up. Quinones has actually had his fight, his UFC debut delayed multiple times now. The first time was in February against Volkanovski. He was, it was his injury that delayed it. And then this last time, Jared Gordon ended up having to be hospitalized after his weight cut. So the weight cut is a concern for me. If Gordon's having a lot of issues making 145 pounds, that could affect how he fights. So that's really the only thing that's changed for me is the fact that Gordon had a lot of trouble with the weight cut the last time. But overall, I still think that Jared Gordon is the more well-rounded of the two fighters. And I'm going to side with Gordon. I'm not crazy confident because, again, both guys are making their UFC debuts. But I think if Gordon can mix things up, maybe bring some more of the ground game into it, I think he can, he is the better wrestler than Quinones. And I think, overall, as long as he mixes things up, he should be able to win, but I'm not crazy confident about it because, again, we really haven't seen either of these guys and how they perform actually inside a UFC octagon. But my pick will be Gordon. Now, moving up to the lightweight division for the Fox Sports 2 preliminary card, we have Devin Powell, who is 8-1, taking on Daryl Horcher, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Horcher -260, the comeback on Powell at +180. Right now, looking over five dimes, line has ballooned up a little bit. It's currently -420 for Horcher, and the comeback on Powell is at +335. I do understand it. I mean, Horcher, he came in as a last-minute replacement and fought Khabib Nurmagomedov on short notice, and he was respectable in that fight. Obviously, he got finished along the way, but on short notice, fighting one of the best fighters in the world that's actually in line for a title shot and losing, there's no shame in that at all. Now, before that, Horcher's background, he was a CFFC lightweight champion. He's also a Bellator vet, so he's got some solid experience. And what this guy's about is, honestly, if he could keep the fight upright, the guy can stand and bang with the best of them and knock people out. And I think that's what he's going to look to do against a guy like Powell. Powell, I mean, he's a pretty tough fighter in his own right. I have a lot of respect for the guy as well because he's one of these guys that I think is a pretty well-rounded fighter. Not really great in any area, but he does show a lot of toughness, and you can't count him out at all. I mean, the guy definitely shows up, and he comes to win. Now, he's long for the weight class. He has okay striking. He has a BJJ black belt, so he can submit people on the ground as well. He did lose his debut, though, to close, and that was by unanimous decision in a tough fought battle. I mean, he had a ton of heart, but he did clearly lose that fight. I think it's going to be similar here. I think Horcher's going to be the aggressor on the feet. I think he's going to bully Powell around a little bit, and I think he's going to be able to either possibly finish Powell. It's not an easy task to finish Powell. Obviously, we know that. I mean, he's been rocked before. He's been busted up, and he finds a way to actually come back and win those fights at times. So Powell can definitely hang on and survive, but I think Horcher is going to be the bully. He's going to dictate the pace. I think Powell's going to struggle getting the takedowns against Horcher, and Horcher is going to make him pay for it. So I think if it hits the scorecards, it's Horcher. I think if it finishes it inside, it might be Horcher knocking Powell out as well. So my pick is going to be Horcher. I do agree with the early action. I think right now it's getting a little out of hand at -420, but it's hard to pick against Horcher in this spot.
I definitely like Horcher better than Powell. I mean, I will give Powell credit. The guy is tough as all hell. I mean, in his UFC debut against Drakkar Close, he got the crap kicked out of him for three straight rounds. I mean, he got lit up, but he kept pushing forward. He kept fighting, but it was extremely one-sided. I think Powell's a little bit too tough for his own good. The talent just and the heart just don't quite match. So I think what happens here is Horcher is just, he hits way harder. He's more technical on the feet. If this stays standing, I think Horcher lights Powell up. In Horcher's UFC debut, I mean, Nurmagomedov just made mincemeat out of his face with ground and pound and takedowns. But, you know, that's Khabib Nurmagomedov, one of the top two or three lightweights in the entire world. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Powell was facing a fellow UFC debutante and he got massacred. So I think this is a much better fight for Horcher. He's had a lot of really good performances when he was able to stay standing in the past, and I think he does stay standing here. Powell does have a decent submission game, but I'm not sure if he's going to be able to implement it. He just doesn't have the wrestling ability or the strength to drag Horcher to the ground. So I think Horcher keeps it standing. I think Horcher wins the stand-up exchanges, probably wins a decision because Powell's so tough that it'll be tough for the ref to stop the fight. I don't think Powell gets knocked out. So I see Horcher winning a one-sided unanimous decision. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Carla Esparza, the former champion who is 12-4 overall, taking on Marina Moroz, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Esparza -230, the comeback on Moroz at +170. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Esparza -270, the comeback is +230. Now, this is interesting because the early action came in on Moroz and it dropped all the way down to under 2-1. Now we're seeing it back at 270. I think 270 is a little bit more accurate. You got to give Moroz a lot of respect because I do think she's a talented fighter. I mean, she's long for the weight class. She has a great jiu-jitsu game and her striking's come along as well. I mean, she's fought decent competition now, so she's getting experience. She's only getting better fight by fight. But I think Esparza has been probably a little bit disrespected up to this point. I realized she was a former UFC champion. Let's not forget that. But she got dethroned right away by Jacek, and Jacek is the current reigning champion. And she made her look bad in that fight. Esparza wasn't able to get the fight to the floor, and she took a beating. But let's not forget, Esparza has some quality wins before that. I mean, Rose Namajunas, for example, she looked great in that fight against Rose. And she's faced and beaten a lot of high-level competition. So it's not like Esparza is really a bad fighter that's past her prime either. She's 29 years old. I think she has room to still get a little bit better. My problem with Esparza, she's been a little bit inconsistent as of late. Of course, she's coming off a decision loss to Randall Marcus, but that was definitely a close fight and another respectable loss because Randall Marcus is definitely a pretty good fighter, a solid fighter that at one point was kind of working her way up to her title shot as well. So close fight. Esparza definitely has the ability to beat most girls at 115 pounds and work her way back up the ladder and possibly in another title shot. I'm not saying she would win that title shot, but she would possibly get to that point or at least get in the mix into the top five or so. So in my opinion, this is going to be her fight to win or lose. She could dictate where the fight goes. I think she can put Moroz on her back, and I think she can probably avoid the submission game of Moroz and have some success on the ground, land some ground and pound along the way. I think if it stays upright as well, even though Moroz is going to be the larger, she's going to be the taller fighter. She's going to have a 4-inch reach advantage. I think on the feet, the sparring is going to kind of go back and forth a little bit. I think that Esparza is going to do well enough on the feet to close the distance. She has a little bit of speed and she has a little bit of power that she throws in her punches as well, that Moroz is not going to blow Esparza out even on the feet. So I think it's going to be competitive on the feet, and I think Esparza is going to get the takedowns, and she's probably going to grind out an impressive decision win. So my pick is going to be Esparza to get the W here.
Marina Moraes is a very talented fighter. I mean, that UFC debut where she took out Joanne Calderwood and immediately put a stamp on the women's strawweight division was very impressive. And she's only had the one loss inside the octagon. But the main issue for me is a very key statistic. Her takedown defense is 0%. And Carla Esparza is the best wrestler in the women's strawweight division. So you combine those two, it does not bode well. Now on the feet, I think, you know, Moroz does come from a pretty strong Ukrainian boxing background. So I think on the feet, she should get the better of Carla Esparza. She probably is the better submission grappler than Esparza, with, you know, those patented arm bars of hers, but that's it. There's no way that she's going to be able to stop Carla Esparza from taking her down. I mean, she couldn't stop Valerie Letourneau from taking her down. She couldn't stop Joanne Calderwood, Danielle Johnson from taking her down. So I just expect what happens in this fight is Esparza repeatedly takes Moroz down, beats her up, and at least wins a decision. And I'm not too worried about Esparza getting submitted from top position either. I mean, this is a girl that was able to get top position against Rose Namajunas, who has, in my opinion, a much more dangerous guard than Moroz. I mean, Namajunas was submitting girls left and right on The Ultimate Fighter. And then when Carla Esparza took her down, I mean, she just shrugged off those submission attempts, wore her down, you know, just basically beat on her until, Rose didn't have any fight left and then ended up getting a stoppage. So I think Esparza at least wins a decision, but she might wear Morose down enough that she could get a late finish as well. So I'm going to side with Carla Esparza. I think that she's angry about losing that last fight against Randa Marcos, and I think that she takes it out on Morose here. So my pick is Esparza. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Vitor Miranda, who is 13-5, taking on Marvin Vettori, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
Up in Vettori, -210. The comeback on Miranda at +160. I thought that was enough, but obviously not, because right now it's Vettori -365. The comeback on Miranda is at +305. I do kind of agree with the action. I'm surprised that people are disrespecting Miranda that much, though. I think that Miranda, of course, coming off a loss to Chris Camozzi, and Camozzi coming off losses as well, or coming off a loss, I should say. It's not a good look. I think his stock is dropping a little bit, and adding the age, Miranda's 39 years old. And Vettori has more of the upside. I think he's the more popular fighter of the two for sure. A lot of high expectations for him. He's only 23 years old. And from what he showed thus far in the UFC, he could definitely improve and get better and become somewhat of a threat in the UFC middleweight division as he progresses, as he ages a little bit as well and gets more experience. So this is a step up, though, because I think that Miranda's presents a lot more problems than people realize with this fight. I mean, he definitely has to work on his takedown defense. Miranda does, because I think Vittori's going to come in and try to ground him and kind of take away the striking advantage that Miranda does have. But that's exactly it here. Miranda is a striker. He has an advantage on the feet. His boxing's nice. He could even mix it up with his kicks as well. And he has that ability to be precise and knock people out. So that's why Miranda is dangerous. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that people came in as strong as they did on Vettori. And I do think the line's a little bit high right now. Miranda is getting a little bit disrespected. But with all that being said, I think what's going to happen here is Vettori is going to mix things up. He's going to start on the feet with Miranda. I think he's going to be able to do okay with some of the exchanges, but I think he's going to eventually be able to get the fight to the floor and grind on Miranda and possibly even look for a finish along the way. So Vettori has a pretty decent offensive submission game to go along with it. Miranda has decent sub defense, so it's not going to be the easiest guy to sub, but I think if as it progresses, as it goes on, Vettori could possibly get that sub or get the finish on the ground. If not, I think he probably wins on the scorecards anyway. So I do understand the action that's coming in. I just think it's another spot where the line is a tad bit overinflated, and Miranda is probably better than the current odds indicate right now. So my pick is going to be Vettori to win. Just be careful out there if you're betting this fight.
And I completely understand the Vettori hype. He looked great in his UFC debut. He didn't embarrass himself in his last fight where he lost. And Vitor Miranda, you know, he's getting up there in years, and he lost to Chris Camozzi, of all people. So I can completely understand why people are siding with Vettori so strongly. But that being said, in pure stand-up skills, Vitor Miranda is way ahead of Marvin Vettori overall. Vettori definitely, he's not a very active striker, and I think those are the type of strikers that can give Miranda fits. Like, the reason Camozzi was able to have so much success against Miranda was he just kept pressuring him and crowding him and just constantly throwing strikes at him, and Miranda just never really got comfortable. I think he can get comfortable in the cage against Vettori. So if this is primarily a stand-up contest, I can see Miranda getting the better of it for sure. I mean, this guy has power. He has technique. He definitely is capable of winning this fight if it stays standing. Where Vettori probably has the edge is in terms of grappling. His takedowns have been strong so far in his UFC career. And I mean, he was able to even get some grappling going against Antonio Carlos Jr. So, taking his back briefly. So if he can get Miranda to the floor, that's really where he has a huge edge. Now, it's just all about whether or not he can get the wrestling going. So, overall, I think Vettori is a talented young fighter, but he might have some of that striking success go to his head here, because I think he's going to keep it standing for a while against Miranda, and he might get punished for it. So I'm slightly siding with Vitor Miranda. I know it's a huge upset call, but I think Miranda is a lot better than people are giving him credit for. He's a lot, this fight's a lot closer than the betting line indicates. And I think if this fight stays standing, there's a good chance that Miranda can pull it off. So I'm going to side with Miranda. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a lightweight contest between Clay Guida, who is 32-14, and Eric Koch, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I'll put Koch minus 265, the comeback on Guida at plus 185. The line dropped originally, and Koch became less of a favorite, but right now you're seeing the opposite. It's minus 340 for Koch, and the comeback on Guida is at plus 280. So two-way action coming into this fight, a lot of early support on Guida, a lot of late support coming in on Koch, and I think it'll continue to see two-way action. I mean, Guida, as a big underdog, it's tough not to take a stab at him, I guess, in most people's minds, but it is 2017. Guida's been around for a long, long time. He's 35 years old. In MMA years, he's way beyond that. I mean, the guy has had an impressive career, one of the best grinders, one of the guys that have that relentless pace, one of the best, most respected, I think, fighters on the UFC roster for a long time. I mean, you know what you're getting with Guida. He's going to come bring it. He's going to try to implement his game plan. He might not be, I think, the funnest fighter to watch because of his grinding style. But at the same time, I mean, it is kind of entertaining to watch him fight because he puts 110% into it every time. And you know what you're, like I said, you're getting with Guida. So I do think that he's not what he used to be, though. Father Time has caught up to him a little bit. He's getting knocked out a little bit more frequently. He's even getting caught in more subs. So his game is definitely taking a step back, but he's trying. He's you know, getting the work in. He's moving around camps from time to time. He's obviously spent the majority of his career, or a big chunk of it, I should say, at Greg Jackson's. I know he's been training with Team Alpha Male as well. He's just trying to kind of get a different look and maintain relevancy, I think, in his spot. But unfortunately for him, he's facing a guy that can really beat him on the feet, and he can beat him on the ground as well. So regardless of where this fight takes place, I think Koch is just stylistically a tough matchup for him. And Koch is fortunate he is getting this matchup as well, because he could possibly start getting some momentum. I mean, let's not forget, Koch at 145 at one time was supposed to fight Jose Aldo for the title. That's how good he was climbing the ladder and how much potential the guy really had. He's such a well-rounded fighter. He's a finisher on the feet. He's a finisher on the ground. He's got good takedown defense. So the guy can beat you up everywhere. And it's in, you know, he has the ability to keep the fight in his realm as well. But the problem being, his chin has definitely gotten suspect. I mean, he's been getting clipped. He's been getting wobbled. Of course, Lamas was able to destroy him on the ground as well. So it's a head scratcher, because all of a sudden we saw Koch injury prone. I mean, it's hard for him to stay healthy, which is a big surprise. And, you know, and that's one thing that you can say bad about him still to this point. We need to see Koch get a little bit more consistent, get in there and show up, get maybe string two or three wins together within a decent time frame, maybe within a year's time, and then, you know, he could get back on track a little bit. And he's starting to put it together. His last fight against Campbell was a very difficult fight for him, and he looked great in that fight. He even took some punishment on the feet, but he was able to get the fight to the ground and do what he does best, and that's submit people on the ground as well. So Koch is a dangerous fight for Guida, because I think he could probably keep it upright. Even if Guida puts him on his back, Guida might get submitted by Koch. That's how slick Koch is off his back at times as well. So I think it's just a tough fight, and along the way, in a three-round fight, I think Guida is less dangerous, and he's probably not going to catch Koch on that chin and knock him out, but I do think Koch can potentially end it against Guida on the feet or on the ground. So three rounds is a tough fight for Guida to go with Koch, and I think Koch puts together a string of wins here, and hopefully he can stay injury-free, and we get to see him compete at a high level moving forward as well. So I do understand the late action, or, you know, as we get closer to fight time, why the line's increasing. I think stylistically it is a tough matchup for Guida, and I think Koch's going to get the W here.
Overall, Clay Guida just, he's definitely in a major decline at this point. As Nick mentioned, he's never going to be a title challenger. And at this point, I don't think he's ever going to be a ranked fighter again. Guida has been finished in all four of his last losses. So, I mean, he's not just losing. I mean, he's getting beaten soundly in those losses. And some of those fights he was winning and then found a way to lose them. I mean, it just has not been a very good run for Clay Guida. He's been hopping around gym to gym trying to find the answer, but the real answer is he's just starting to get older. He's not able to take punishment like he used to be. He's, you know, he's getting sloppy on the ground and falling into submissions. So overall, I think this is just a really good matchup for Eric Koch. Koch should have him beat by light years on the feet, both with his kicking game and boxing. The only thing that I'm a little concerned about is Clay Guida's wrestling. If Guida can get in Koch's face and get this fight to the floor and grind it out, it could be a repeat of when Guida fought Anthony Pettis in Pettis's UFC debut at lightweight. So there is a possibility that Guida can win this, because that grinding wrestling style will always have opportunities to get victories against fighters that can't stop takedowns. So Koch's takedown defense, though, overall, it's pretty good. For his career, it's 80%. Now, he hasn't faced a lot of really good wrestlers, and the one time that he did, like in Ricardo Lamas, I mean, he got taken down and he got battered on the canvas. So I am a little concerned about that, but overall, I think Koch should be able to work his way back to the feet. It's not like Clay Guida is going to be threatening with a submission or a knockout on the ground. Koch's big issue is the fact that he doesn't have a great chin, but Guida doesn't have a lot of power, so I don't think he'll be too concerned in that department. So overall, if it goes to the floor, Koch should be able to just work his way back to the feet, because he is big and strong. He does have some height and reach and everything on Guida. Guida is returning to the lightweight division here, so I don't know how much muscle he's been able to pack on since his last fight against Ortega. And Koch also has a bit of a dangerous guard. He's pulled off a triangle choke off of his back, so with Guida getting caught in more submissions lately, there's a possibility that could happen as well. So overall, I like Eric Koch's odds. The only thing I'm concerned about is Guida, you know, just laying and praying for three rounds and winning a decision that way. But I think Koch is game enough to avoid that situation. So I'm going to side with Eric Koch. Now, moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a featherweight contest between BJ Penn, who is 16-11-2, taking on Dennis Seaver, who is 22-11 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
This is a tough one to set a line on for sure. I opened Seaver minus 180, the comeback on Penn at plus 140. Right now you're looking over at five dimes. It's Seaver minus 210, the comeback on BJ Penn is actually at plus 175. So more action coming in Seaver's way. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. It's tough. I mean, from what we've seen of BJ Penn lately, this is another guy that really should be retired. He shouldn't have came back. I mean, look, he's destroying his legacy, in my opinion, and he's one of the best fighters of all time. I mean, you could definitely put him up there on a pedestal and say, look how complete of a fighter this guy was. I mean, his takedown defense, I understand, minus the BJ or the George St. Pierre fights or whatnot. At one point, BJ Penn's takedown defense was ridiculously good. And then his boxing on the feet, his submission game on the ground. I mean, just one of the best ever, in my opinion. But he's coming back. He's taking losses that he really shouldn't be taking. I mean, he's 38 years old, and he's almost becoming a 500 type of fighter. I don't want to see that. I mean, he's a UFC Hall of Famer. I understand that, but I don't want to see this guy keep on losing. So hopefully he doesn't lose here, and this is a matchup that he realistically could possibly win. I know in his last fight against Yair Rodriguez, Penn actually did show a little bit more of what I'd like to see. In that fight, the previous fight before that against Frankie Edgar, to me, he looked terrible. I mean, just awful. At least he made a little bit of progress in that Yair Rodriguez fight, where he still got beat up. I mean, those leg kicks, the kicking game of Yair really made life miserable for Penn. There wasn't much he could do about it. The aggressive attack, and he finally got, you know, he wilted under that pressure. He got put out. But that being said, this is a different fight with Seaver. I think Seaver presents a lot of problems for Penn as well, because he's not a bad striker in his own right. And I think he does have a little bit more left in the tank. Now, Seaver has been out since his loss to Kawajiri, and that was back in 2015. He's 38 years old as well. But at least in my opinion, Seaver's able to compete still and perform and win fights in the featherweight division. I mean, he has a win over Rosa not too long ago. It's been a few years or whatnot, but still, I think that we've seen more from Seaver recently than we have Penn. That's why he's opening the favorite. A lot of people are fading BJ Penn. I have to pick Seaver as well, because it's just, you can't have a lot of confidence in BJ Penn right now, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he shows up and he pulls off a knockout type of win in this fight. And maybe he hangs him up after this, maybe gets one more win and then just hang him up. I doubt that with BJ Penn. He's a warrior. It's in his blood. I understand it. I think that, Dana White's probably going to have to force him to retire is what it's going to come down to. So hopefully it's not like that for Penn and he wins this fight and moves on. But I don't think he's going to. I honestly have to side with Dennis Seaver in this fight. I think that he's probably got more left in the tank and he probably wins this fight. So not a confident pick. I mean, it's BJ Penn for crying out loud. But from what we've seen of Penn lately, you can't really trust that. So the pick is Seaver here.
Both these guys are in the tail end of their careers. I mean, BJ Penn already had the tail end of his career and he just couldn't stay retired. That's happened to him twice now. The first time they let him come out of retirement and they fed him, Frankie Edgar, and that was a disaster. I mean, he got embarrassed in that fight, just the absolute crap kicked out of him. And then he was able to let it go for about a little over 2 years and then he couldn't resist it and he came back again and most recently faced Yair Rodriguez this past January, and he completely embarrassed himself again. I mean, he made Yair look so good that I actually thought Yair could be the next champion at featherweight. And that's not because Yair was so amazing. It's because I still had that much respect for BJ Penn that somebody that smashed him that easily I thought had to be, you know, a contender. But no, it's because BJ Penn isn't good anymore. I wish he would stop fighting. Like, he just doesn't have it. Like, I know that Dennis Seaver hasn't fought since 2015, and he's the same age, but at least Seaver's been active overall, and he's been competitive with people. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Seaver actually got a win. Like, BJ Penn hasn't got a win in 7 years. 7 years. And that was against Matt Hughes. Like, one of the last fights of Hughes' career. So, what is he doing? Why can't he let this go? Like, I know Nick's talking about the itch and everything, but come on, man. BJ has okay boxing. He's got a great ground game. But, I mean, does that really even matter at this point? He's been a punching bag in there. Now, I know Seaver is somebody that's a little bit more on his level at this point, especially with Seaver being older and inactive, but I still think Seaver takes this. I mean, Seaver has those beautiful spinning back kicks. His ground game's pretty underrated as well, and it's not like BJ Penn is an amazing wrestler. I don't even know if BJ's still training at Greg Jackson's. Like, he's the type of guy that blames his coaches for everything when things go wrong. So he might have just done his whole camp in Hawaii or something. I don't know. But overall, I really wish BJ Penn would just retire and stay retired instead of tarnishing the legacy. I mean, he's already in the UFC Hall of Fame. He has nothing left to prove. But we'll see what happens here. I mean, maybe BJ Penn could win just because Seaver's also old and has not fought in a while, but I don't think it happens. I think with how bad BJ Penn has looked, I think there's a good chance that Seaver doesn't just win, but might even finish him. So I'm going to side with Dennis Seaver as well. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Tim Means, who is 26-8-1 with one no contest, taking on Alex Garcia, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Means, minus 260, the comeback on Garcia, plus 180. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Means, minus 250, the comeback Garcia, plus 210. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming on this fight, and it is a tough one. I mean, let's face it, Means, in my opinion, is one of the nastiest fighters you want to see on the UFC roster. He's got that killer instinct. He brings it. He's got good takedown defense. He's just got that mean mentality and edge over him. And he's a vicious, vicious finisher. I mean, he gets you in trouble on the feet or on the ground. You're in some serious stuff. I mean, Means has that killer instinct and he delivers more times than not. He's a fun fighter to watch. I know a lot of people were surprised that he got beat by Oliveira, especially the short fight before that. He was looking so good in that fight, but that definitely is his kryptonite still. I mean, you can ground Means. You can submit Means. It's his ground game, even though he has gotten better, and he gets mad when people say he doesn't have good takedown defense. He really does. It's just matchups. I mean, there's some certain guys out there that are able to get him down, but in most cases you can't. And if you can't, you're going to get beat up in this fight. So stylistically, that's why this is kind of a tough matchup for Garcia. I mean, Garcia, if you want to say anything negative about him right away, it's his cardio and it's his chin. I mean, the guy has conditioning issues. He always has. It seems like he's addressed them a little bit. He's gotten better at times, but still in a grueling fight against a guy like Tim Means, your conditioning has to be up to par if you want to survive it. And I think your chin has to hold up as well. So Garcia does have a path to victory, and that's getting this fight to the ground and trying to grind Tim Means out for three hard-fought rounds, but can he do it for that long? I'm not so sure. I think Means' takedown defense is good enough that he probably keeps it upright, and even though Garcia has some explosive power on the feet, and I mean, it wouldn't be shocking for Garcia to knock anybody out. He's just an athlete and an explosive one, like I said, with a ton of power. He's got speed as well, so sure, he could throw a big right hand and catch somebody and possibly knock him out as well, but I think that that's less likely. Means probably survives on the feet against Garcia, and he probably gets up enough times or keeps it upright enough that he probably knocks Garcia out. So my pick is Means. I think he's just going to be too much for Garcia. I think Means is going to get back on track and then make another short run here. We'll see where it takes him.
And I have to agree. Tim Means is just the more durable fighter, the fighter with better conditioning, the fighter that's just a little bit more capable. I mean, Alex Garcia is more well-rounded because, I mean, he's dangerous on the feet. He's got power there, and he has really good wrestling. The problem is he just cannot keep that conditioning going for three straight rounds. We've seen multiple times where he was able to start really strong, maybe even take a guy out quickly. But if he doesn't, then he becomes a liability. His chin is a big question mark. I mean, he's been finished in fights where he started strong and then slowed down and then just started eating shots. And Tim Means is a guy that can withstand early punishment because Means is a very durable, tough welterweight. And then Means has excellent cardio. So if Garcia can't take Tim Means out or can't at least win the first two rounds and then coast, then I think Tim Means at some point just starts cleaning Garcia's clock. Like, all it really takes is a couple takedowns defended, and then Garcia is going to be in huge trouble. He can't handle a guy that can throw a good jab, and Means definitely is capable of doing that. Means has a bit of a reach advantage, and he's 5 inches taller. So, I mean, if he can get this in the clinch, I think Means can land some really nasty elbows or knees. I don't see this going well for Garcia after the first round. So I like Tim Means. I'm going to pick him. Now, moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Joakim Christensen, who is 14-5, taking on UFC newcomer Dominic Reyes, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Reyes, minus 275, the comeback on Christensen at plus 195. The hype around Reyes wasn't enough at minus 275. Right now, it's actually Reyes minus 370, the comeback on Christensen plus 310. Look, I got a ton of respect for Christensen. He's a solid guy, even at age 38. I think in MMA years, he's really not up to that level, but he's had a little bit of ups and downs, of course, in the UFC thus far, but he's a pretty well-rounded fighter. I mean, he's not horrible on the feet. He pushes a decent pace. He's not bad on the ground either. He's just got a total package. Just unfortunately for Christensen, it's nothing that he overly excels at. And against Reyes, there is something he excels at, and it's striking. I mean, the guy has some vicious knockout power. If you look at his kicking game, that's what's highlighted. I mean, look recently at his fight in LFA. You can look it up on YouTube, but he has a highlight reel knockout that most of us have seen already. I mean, the guy was kind of showboating a little bit, and Reyes kicked his head off and basically just knocked the guy out. I mean, it was a beautiful kick. And the thing is with Reyes, it's not just that it was this time that's happened. I mean, he's performed at that level, and his striking ability has been like that for a while. If you look, he has other highlight reel finishes with head kick knockouts. He has also that left leg, just put it this way, his left kick is vicious, whether it's to the body, to the head, and he throws it often and he throws it hard, and it's hard to time it, it's hard to stop. So the striking ability on the feet for Reyes, more than just that kick, but that's what's highlighted, like I said, is pretty impressive. And he's long for the weight class. He's training with good people. He's, you know, he's finding his way to Colorado, training with Curtis Blades and crew. So he's working on that ground game. And I think that's where, if any area at all, Reyes has to improve is that ground game. He is getting a little bit better. So he's got a little bit of wrestling. He's got a little bit of jiu-jitsu, but I think fighters that will beat him are ones that will ground him and kind of avoid his submissions and grind him out a little bit. We'll see. So he needs to work on that area and continue to improve that. But on the feet, I think he does have a decent advantage over Christensen. And I think he could possibly finish Christensen. Now, that's not an easy task, but I mean, with the knockout power that he has, it can definitely happen. So I understand the hype train on Reyes. I think it is impressive. And if the UFC matches this guy right, they can make that even more so. I mean, if they give this guy winnable fights in his next three or four that he knocks out most of those guys, watch out. The hype train on Ray is going to be unreal. But again, the guy is definitely talented, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do and how he moves up the UFC ladder. So my pick is Reyes to win.
Joakim Christensen has done okay so far in his UFC career, but I just think this is a bad matchup for him. I mean, the main thing going against him is his age. I mean, he's already 38 years old. He's had three fights inside the UFC. And while he looked good against Mihajlovic when he got that third-round TKO, he has been finished in his other two fights. Now, granted, those were on the ground, and Reyes isn't much of a threat on the ground, so this could get interesting with the stand-up, because Christensen is long, but I just think Reyes is a much sharper and crisper striker overall. Now, Christensen has a good jab, he mixes things up pretty well, and his boxing is pretty crisp, but Reyes, I really think that the whole point, the whole reason that this fight is even on the main card at all is because the UFC wants to showcase Dominic Reyes. Like, there's really no reason for them to be wanting to showcase Christensen. I mean, he's already 38 years old. He's 1-2 in the octagon with two stoppage losses. I think the UFC expects that Dominic Reyes is going to do something spectacular in this fight because that's what he does in his fights. This guy is flexible. He has absolutely devastating knockouts. Nick brought up, you can find some of them on YouTube, but I mean, one that was super impressive. His opponent just like taunted him and then like to act like his punches and kicks weren't hurting him. And then Reyes just kicked him right in the face and knocked him out cold. So, Reyes, the head kicks are definitely something to look out for because, I mean, this guy, I mean, he might have the best head kick in the light heavyweight division. It's that good, and I know he's making his UFC debut, and that's a lot of hype to put behind somebody, but I really think the UFC thinks extremely highly of this kid, and Reyes making his UFC debut, I think that it's going to be a very impressive one. Christensen isn't the most athletic. He's not the quickest. I don't know if he'll be able to get out of the way of some of these heavy strikes that Reyes is going to be throwing, and I think at some point Reyes connects with something nasty and knocks Christensen out. So my pick is going to be Dominic Reyes. Now dropping all the way down to the women's strawweight division, we have Felice Herrig, who is 12-6, taking on Justine Kish, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Kish -180, the comeback on Herrig at +140. Now, of course, the line did go crazy a little bit with the respect coming in towards Herrig. Herrig is now -120. The comeback on Kish is even money. I don't necessarily agree with that movement. Now, of course, I should get into it by saying Herrig has been more than impressive recently. I understand a little bit of hype that's surrounding her right now because, I mean, she beat in her last fight by decision a very hyped fighter in her own right, Alexa Grasso. I mean, Grasso, it was one of these guys that a lot of people believed was a future contender, a future champion. That's how talented she was. And Felice Herrig went in there and put it on her. I mean, she performed relatively well, to say the least. I mean, it was an impressive, deserving unanimous decision win over a fighter like Grasso. Now, the fight before that, she actually defeated Kaylin Curran, and she submitted her fairly quickly as well. So two impressive back-to-back wins when she was a little bit sketchy before that. So mentally and physically, Herrig looked a lot better. She's got some confidence coming into this fight. I understand what people believe and what they see in her, especially considering her opponent, Kish, at times looks a little too hittable. I mean, her defense looks bad. I mean, you look at her, you think, why? Wow, this girl doesn't block her head at all. She doesn't move her head. She gets smashed in the face or whatnot. But thankfully for Kish, she's tough. She's durable. She could take that punishment. And let's face it, a lot of these ladies don't have that crazy knockout power that a lot of sometimes the male divisions do have. So she can kind of be able to fight that way, right? And the difference in this fight here for me is Kish has been pretty impressive. I mean, her level of competition is actually probably a little underrated if you think about it. Now, her last fight over Yoder, I should say, was impressive to me because Yoder is definitely an underrated fighter, especially on the ground. Yoder is able to finish most. Now, Kish was in some problematic spots really throughout that fight. She managed to get out of every spot she was in. It looked like Yoder was about to submit her. It looked like she had superior position and she was going to do some damage. Kish got out She got out, reversed things. She was in really good positions, and she ended up doing well in that fight. I mean, her constant, relentless pace is what highlights Kish, and I think it's impressive because she only has one mode, and that's straight ahead. Now, she is a little wild and aggressive at times, and that leads, again, to defensive flaws, but she makes up for it with that pace she pushes. And I think she's going to win this fight over Herrig because of that same reason. If you look back at the Grasso fight, Herrig was allowed to get settled in. Grasso didn't get on Herrig right away. She didn't push a high pace. She let Herrig settle in and start kind of creeping forward and start flowing with her offense. And once Herrig did that, her confidence gained momentum. And before you knew it, she was in a fight. She was in a fight she knew she could win. Well, with a girl like Kish, she cannot do that. Kish is going to be relentless from the rip. She's going to be on top of Herrig. She's going to be pushing her into the cage. She's going to be trying to knock her out. I mean, she's going to be throwing with everything. And she's going to keep that pace up for three rounds. So, of course, Herrig is going to get her punches in. She's going to get her maybe scrambles in, top position or whatnot. But Kish is going to be able to scramble out of those positions. She's going to get in a superior position, and she's going to make Herrig pay. And one thing for Herrig that I can say that I've noticed from her is if she's not able to kind of get in the fight early and the fight starts getting more difficult for her, she tends to fold a little bit at times. I'm not saying she's going to quit, but I think that she's going to kind of, when she's up against it against a fighter like Kish, I think she's not going to perform as well as she can as the fight progresses, at least. So Kish is probably going to get stronger as the fight goes on, and I think we'll see Harry kind of slow down and just kind of lose confidence as the fight goes on. So with all that being said, I disagree with the early action on Herrig, and I think that Kish is the right side. So I'm going to pick Kish, and even money, there's definitely some value in Kish as well. So the pick is Kish to probably beat Herrig by decision. I wouldn't even be surprised if she finishes Herrig late. So that's just my opinion. We'll see how it plays out.
Kish hasn't looked as good as I was expecting her to look inside the octagon, but I think part of that has to do with the fact that she was recovering from knee surgery. She was one of the favorites to win that inaugural season of the Ultimate Fighter that debuted the women's strawweight division, but she wasn't really able to compete. She got hurt. I mean, she has quality wins in her career. She's still undefeated overall. She's very well-rounded in just about every aspect. The only issue that I'm really concerned about with Kish is she's a bit too hittable on the feet. Her striking defense is not very good. So, in a pure stand-up fight against a really talented striker, I think she gets beat up. Now, Felice Herrig does come from a kickboxing background, but striking really isn't her strong suit. I think Herrig is at her best when she's able to get fights to the ground, and she has a very aggressive ground game that she's really put a lot of time in. I mean, she pulled off impressive submissions over Kaylin Curran, over Lisa Ellis. So I think if Herrig can get Kish on her back, she might be able to make something happen. But as Nick mentioned, Kish is a very crafty grappler as well, and I don't think Herrig can catch her in any of her arm bars or anything like that. I mean, it would have to be, you know, a back take and a rear naked choke, like some kind of wear you down domination type of thing. And I don't know if Herrig can keep that up. The one thing that Herrig has not had going for her is conditioning. Even on this nice little resurgent run where she picked up that victory over Grasso, she still starts to slow down as the fight wears on. I mean, you can't take that image of Paige VanZant just wearing her out and just steamrolling her in the final two rounds of their fight to win a decision. You can't take that image out of my head. So I think Herrig starts strong in this fight. I can even see her winning the first round, but I think Justine Kish turns it on in the rounds 2 and 3 and at least wins a decision, maybe even finds a finish at some point. I just think overall Kish is the better fighter, and once Kish kind of settles into a groove, she should be able to win the stand-up exchanges, and I think that she might be the better grappler too, and she could win on the ground. So I'm going to side with Justine Kish as well. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a middleweight fight between Tim Boesch, who is 20-11, taking on Johnny Hendricks, who is 18-6. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Hendricks, -245, the comeback on Boesch at +175. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's Hendricks -220, the comeback on Boesch +180. So line margins have tightened up. And this fight's been out for a long time, so there's been plenty of two-way action coming into this fight as well, and line staying steady. This is a tough one. I mean, for me, I understand that Hendricks fighting at 185 it's probably better for him because it was tough for him to make 170 pounds. But man, he's small for this 185 pound weight class. So that's the problem. And as he progresses and moves his way up the ladder, he's going to come into some tough challenges with much bigger fighters that can wrestle as well. So that we're going to see how that plays out. But in his fight with Bosch again, I mean, he's going to be undersized against a guy like Tim Bosch. I just think that Bosch right now, the timing is well, because I think Bosch is one of those guys that you can't underestimate him. I mean, the guy's got some skill. He's got some power. Obviously he's going to have some size. He's got some wrestling. He's not an easy out here, but I think that skill for skill, there's no question. Hendricks is the better wrestler. I think Hendricks is the better striker. So I really don't see where Bosch wins this fight. So stylistically, it's a really good fit and a good matchup for Hendricks. I mean, that's pretty much all you can say about this fight. So I do think where the price is now, I wouldn't lay Hendricks though. I wouldn't bet -220 or so because again, I think he's a bit undersized and Bosch could make life a little bit interesting in this fight for sure for him, but I don't think it happens. I think that Hendricks performs relatively well. He did okay in his last fight as well against Hector Lombard at 185. So even though Lombard's a little bit more his size, I still think that Bosch is an easier fight even than Lombard, despite the history there of all three. That being said, I wouldn't bet it, like I said. So I would stay away and just sit back and watch this fight and see how Hendricks performs. I think he's going to perform pretty well. I think he's going to be able to get the takedowns. He's going to outstrike Bosch on the feet as well and probably earn a decision win. So my pick is going to be Hendricks to win.
You can kind of compare this fight to when Tim Bosch fought Hector Lombard in Lombard's UFC debut, but not exactly. I mean, Bosch was on a nice little run at that point, and he was a lot younger. He was more durable. He had a lot more confidence, I think. And, you know, Johnny Hendricks, he just beat Hector Lombard. So, Bosch, what he had going for him in that fight was, you know, he had some size. He had a little bit of wrestling. He was able to mix in takedown attempts to keep Lombard off of his feet. And Lombard has those fits of just complete inactivity. And Bosch was able to squeeze out a decision in that fight. This time around, though, I mean, Johnny Hendricks is the better wrestler of the two. So if anybody gets takedowns, I think it's going to be Hendricks. Johnny Hendricks is probably the better striker of the two. And Johnny Hendricks is definitely the more durable. I mean, Bosch has been knocked out a few times now pretty badly. So if Hendricks can find a home for that left hand, which has not happened in years at this point, but if he can, Bosch is a prime target. I mean, he is a big head, and it's right there. I mean, if there's anybody that there's a decent chance Hendricks could knock him out, this is probably the time. Now, the other thing is, it's a 3-round fight, so I'm not too worried about Johnny Hendricks gassing, especially with him not having to make a drastic weight cut. The only thing I'm really worried about is Tim Bosch is quite a bit longer. He's got 5 inches in reach on Hendricks, and even though he's not the most technical fighter, he does have a decent jab, and if he can keep Hendricks at bay with his reach, there's a chance for him to squeak out a decision here because he's not going to be able to use his wrestling. I see Hendricks winning those scrambles and exchanges, and I don't think he can trade power for power with Hendricks either. So overall, I like Hendricks here. I think he can push a high pace, and the only other concern I have is that Hendricks enjoyed the weight cut to middleweight so easily that he bulked up huge for this fight thinking it'll be a piece of cake. And then he has a terrible weight cut and somehow misses the middleweight limit, which is possible. But I think Hendricks has a little bit more self-control than that. So my pick is going to be Johnny Hendricks. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the lightweight division, we have Michael Chiesa, who is 14-2, taking on Kevin Lee, who is 15-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsmakers perspective on this one?
Tough fight. This is an interesting fight. You have two of the best UFC lightweights going out of here. I opened at -120 either way. So -120 Chiesa, -120 for Lee. Right now looking over 5 dimes. It's Lee -130. The comeback on Chiesa is at +110. So a little bit more support coming in Lee's way. I understand it. I mean, as far as flashy styles and how stylistically they match up, it's definitely Lee the more popular fighter of the two. I know the press conference, everything's got kind of buzz and momentum going for this fight. You know, the summer press conference that they did, and they kind of got into it with Lee talking smack about Chiesa's mother, whatnot. So we all saw that kind of drama unfold, and both these guys are definitely up for this fight. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and how this plays out, because obviously if you're looking at it from a pure skill perspective, Lee is the more athletic fighter. He should be the better wrestler here. He's got more speed on the feet. I think he should have the better striking ability as well. So there's a lot to like about Lee. Even if he gets it to the ground, Chiesa's more well known for his finishing ability by subs on the ground, but Lee's no slouch on the ground either. I wouldn't be surprised if Lee's able to have some success in that area. But there's a lot of question marks surrounding Lee, in my opinion. The weight cut, we'll see how he comes in. I mean, there's been a lot of rumors flowing around. Most of it's probably smoke and mirrors, but we'll see how it really all unfolds on the scale for Lee. Second of all, I mean, durability and conditioning has always been a little bit of a question mark for Lee as well. So this is a 5-round fight. We'll see how it really plays out. I don't expect it to go all 5 because I think these guys are going to find a path to victory, obviously, along the way, whether it's one guy or another. But we'll see. I mean, durability is a question mark. His chin's a little bit of a concern for me, and his conditioning as well. Now, Chiesa, on the other hand, you could say a little bit of the same thing. I think he's a little bit more durable, though. I don't think his chin's quite as suspect as Lee's, even though they've only both been officially knocked out once. But I do think Chiesa has a little bit better conditioning overall. He does tend to slow down, though, as the fight goes on. But the thing with Chiesa is his durability probably will carry him through here, even on the feet a little bit. I think it gets interesting. Again, Lee has the speed and the power, and I believe he actually has a little bit of a reach advantage, even though Chiesa's the taller fighter. But I think Lee can mix things up. He's a little bit Chiesa can mix things up on the feet. He's a little bit unorthodox with his style and his kicking game as well to go along with it. That, I mean, we'll see how it really plays out. I think, again, Lee does have the advantage on the feet, but on the ground is where Chiesa could really take control and take over. I mean, you look at the Dariush fight for Chiesa. I, for one, got burned on that fight. I really thought stylistically it was a bad matchup for Chiesa. I thought that Dariush wouldn't get submitted by him, and I thought he'd beat him up on the feet. Round one, we saw how it played out. I mean, Dariush had a lot of success in all aspects of the game against Chiesa, but round two was a different story. Dariush made a mistake, started slowing down a little bit. Chiesa took it full advantage and was able to submit him, and I was shocked that he was able to actually get that submission victory over a guy like Dariush. So that's how special and talented this guy is with his chokes. He gets your back, you're in trouble. And if Lee makes one mistake, Chiesa's going to do just that. So for me, I've been going back and forth on this fight a little bit. I think it's a dog or pass situation. I don't think you can lay the juice or the chalk on this fight at all. So for me, it's right now it's Chiesa or pass. And I'm going to actually side with Chiesa as a pick as well. I just think he's a little bit more durable. And as the fight plays out, I think he's probably going to find a way to take Lee's back. And if he does that, I think he wins this fight as well. So tough one to call. Could go either way, but I lean a little bit more towards Chiesa.
This is an extremely competitive fight. I mean, Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee have very similar skill sets. Both are very active ground fighters. I mean, Chiesa, when he gets to the floor, he is extremely aggressive. He goes for your neck, and then he goes for the submission. And once he gets the neck, there's no defending it. As Nick mentioned, with even Beneil Dariush, a world-class grappler, an ADCC-level grappler, and Chiesa, once he got a chin lock on him, he squeezed so tight that Dariush had to submit. Kevin Lee, on the other hand, a very talented wrestler. He can drag fights to the floor and then just dominant top position and then aggressive guard passing, looking for submissions or even a ground and pound TKO. So I'm really excited to see what happens in this fight when these guys clash on the ground. Now on the feet, I think neither guy is great on the feet. Lee was starting to improve in the stand-up, but then he had that fight against Leandro Santos, and he just got blasted with not even a big punch, but, I mean, it cleaned his clock and set up a stoppage loss that really derailed his momentum. But he bounced back from that impressively, and he has just been going to the ground repeatedly against people and just crushing them there. So I'm very interested to see what happens here, because I think while Lee still has some talent on the feet, Chiesa should have more confidence there, because, I mean, Chiesa is tough as hell. This kid can take a punch, and he has cardio for days. We've seen in fights where people can win the first round against Chiesa, but then they can't continue sustain that momentum against him because he's so tough to keep down. It happened with Jim Miller. It happened with Dariush. It's happened over and over again throughout his career. So what I see happening here is I think Chiesa has a little bit more confidence on the feet. I think he can get the better of Kevin Lee on the feet. I think Kevin Lee gets the takedowns on the ground because he's the better athlete, the stronger wrestler. But with this being a 5-round fight, unless Kevin Lee is able to get a finish in the first round or two, I just don't think he can sustain that offense in a 5-round fight. And at some point, the momentum is going to shift to Chiesa. Chiesa is the more durable guy. He's got the better conditioning. And with Kevin Lee and all those big muscles, I think it's really going to start sapping into his strength a little bit and overall cardio as the fight wears on. So unless Kevin Lee gets a finish in the first two rounds, I think Michael Chiesa takes over this fight. And then eventually Chiesa gets a late finish at some point, maybe the fourth round, maybe the fifth round even. I like Michael Chiesa. I like his heart. I like his durability. I like a lot of things about him. And I think that this is a good stylistic matchup for him as long as he can stay out of trouble early. So my pick is going to be Michael Chiesa. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 112. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Saturday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have any plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, 5 Times Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.